can you describe where we are and what we're looking at here?
We are looking at two horses. We are actually, we are under these two horses, which are in front of our National Assembly. It was actually when we had Yugoslavia as a country, this was this Federal Assembly. And across the two streets from here, actually, there was a Serbian National Assembly.
Okay, yeah.
And then after that, after like 20 years ago, this became this official place for parliament.
It's very grand. It's quite Greek. Do you know, it reminds me a bit of like a Colosseum or an amphitheater or something like that.
Yeah. You know, there's Balkans, you know, so it's a mix, right? So
yeah.
Nothing to surprise you.
I don't think I'd realize these horses, they're quite, it's quite intense. What are they? They're like, they're trampling. Are they trampling someone?
Well, I don't know why. I think this is like, you know, representing the hardship of the people who are carrying the horses. Uh-huh. Why are they carrying the horses? Maybe they appreciate horses, huh? I don't know, seriously. This is the man and that is a woman, by the way.
Okay.
This is Tamara, a freelance language teacher based in Belgrade, Serbia.
And why are we here today? Why are we in this specific spot?
Well, because this is the place of the parliament, so the place where the Serbian Assembly is passing the laws, and as we know, the government will draft the law, and in this place, members of parliament will vote for those, and usually, you know, they will accept them and pass them. So we were here with protesters from freelance protests in April, beginning of April, almost 1 year and a half ago. And we were camping here in front of this place because we didn't want the law that the government wanted to pass. We were not happy with it, so we wanted to change it. So that's why we were here.
And we're looking out and we can see there's a road. There's kind of a four-carriage road,
yeah.
Very busy. And where were you camped exactly?
On the road. So we took a half of it one way, one line, actually two lines from one direction that are leading to the center. We are in the very center of the city of Belgrade, and it is very busy road. It's called, the previous name was Boulevard of Revolution, and like, I don't know how many decades ago, the new name is Boulevard of King Alexander, so very important street.
And so you camped there for how many days?
3 days, 3 nights. It was at night, it would go like maybe below zero.
Ooh, Christ.
Yeah.
Must have been quite scary. I imagine it would be.
The cold?
Oh no, more camping in the road in the middle of the street. Did it feel, I don't know, I imagine.
Wow, we felt so special.
Yeah.
We were so happy and special. We brought sandwiches and some brandy with us. And people from Belgrade, you know, they were coming there 24 hours, bringing us food.
And how did that feel? Like, I mean, freelancers, you're often very separate. You're often working in your homes,
yeah,
or your offices, and you're not like, you don't have a centralized workplace. What did it feel like to be here on the street in front of the parliament building fighting for your rights?
Yeah, you know, this is really the first time that was something that's like everybody said first time happened. I don't know, is it globally or like is it a European thing, whatever. But freelancers are, everybody thinks about us that we really have nothing in common, that those are young people who don't care where they are. They certainly don't care about the society where they live. And we proved everybody wrong. Actually, we proved ourselves also wrong because we didn't believe that this is possible.
In this series of the Fair Work podcast, we've looked at work in the planetary labour market. We've looked at the experiences and stories of workers who work via digital platforms, from Colombia to Germany, the USA to the UK. But in each of these stories, not once have any two workers actually met. Think about that for a moment. None of the workers I've spoken to for this series have ever come into physical contact with their colleagues through doing their work. And this is a direct result of the way that work is organised in planetary labour markets. Workers are kept isolated from one another as they work in different locations, unable to communicate with one another, and are therefore unaware of each other's existence. there could be a person just next door doing exactly your job, but you wouldn't know. But in the final two episodes of this series, I want to focus on an example of workers coming together to deny the isolation imposed on them, to look at an example of workers who have overcome the barriers placed between them to come together, organise and campaign for their livelihoods. In December last year, I was lucky enough to spend some time in Belgrade, Serbia, where I met workers, journalists and researchers and spoke to them about the freelancer strikes and protests that occurred at the end of 2020 and throughout 2021, in which workers came together to protest against changes to how the government would tax income from overseas. Serbia has one of the highest proportions of workers working via digital platforms, with an estimated 2% of the national workforce finding work online. And as we'll see, new government legislation threatened to shut down the platform economy in Serbia forever. We'll return to Tamara, the worker I spoke to in the introduction for this podcast, in the next episode. But for now, we'll hear the story of Sonja Lazarević, a freelancer and organiser based in Belgrade. We'll hear her story of how she got into freelancing, how she heard about the new government tax legislation, and what the impact of these changes would have meant for her and her family. I hope you enjoy the show. On a rainy December evening, with night falling, I headed out of Belgrade city centre, up an innocuous street to a white building, just like every other on the street. And this building is an office space for freelancers working on digital platforms, for those working for companies around the globe, a space for just a handful of Serbia's 70,000 freelance workers. Okay, cool. So you're going to show us around your workplace, your office.
Yeah, okay. This here is our kitchen. As you can see, it has everything, a microwave, coffee machine.
And how many of you share this space?
I don't know, 10 to 15, but we're never all here at the same time.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So everybody has its own desk, comes when he wants.
Yeah. And this is the room where...
where people work.
Where the magic happens.
Yeah. I'm not sure if anybody has a meeting, so we will not disturb them now.
Yeah, for sure. It looks very well set up in there. How long have you been here for?
Almost 2 years.
2 years, okay, cool. Yeah. It's a very nice office.
Yeah, guy owns, the owner of this one has two more offices.
Uh-huh.
More luxurious.
Is it quite... because there's so many freelancers in Serbia, is it quite a thing, people having offices like these?
There are quite some shared offices now.
Yeah.
Also throughout Serbia, they're starting to open. Most of them are more modern than this one.
Oh, this one's pretty good.
Okay.
And this is my favourite room.
Yeah, it's...
the ping pong table.
Recreation room.
Wow, look at this. How often does this get used?
It depends who is at the office. Today it's being used quite a lot.
Okay, nice. How's your ping pong skills?
I don't play so much ping pong. Only when I take the kids to work.
Okay, nice.
I'm here to meet a freelance worker who played a central role in the organisation of the freelancer strikes and protests that took the country by storm. So to start off with, if you could just briefly introduce yourself.
So I'm Sonja Lazarević. I'm the president of one of the two freelance organizations in Serbia that organized protests before when we heard that we need to pay some quite heavy taxes, and who participated later at the work group and was part of the team who created the new law on freelance here.
So I wanted to start off and talk about your work. So what do you do for a living and who do you work for?
Okay, I'm something that's called localization expert. So it's translation of mostly software user interface owner's manuals, also testing, linguistic testing of those of the software. The companies I work for are some of the, well, Fortune 500 companies who are like working with the very famous clients around the world. Let's say it like this.
So you work as a translator, and the companies that you work with, are they mainly based in Serbia or are they mainly based outside of Serbia?
They are practically all based outside of Serbia.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And so what led you into this type of work?
This type of work offers you flexibility, so you can work whenever you want. You can divide your work during the day. I have a big family, and well, working from 9 to 5 every day somewhere is not an option for me anymore. I have two kids that recently started to school and one kid in the kindergarten, so you constantly have to go from one place to another, pick them up, bring them something, take them back. It's just, well, no employer would have enough understanding to let you go from work so frequently. So I had to choose to be my own boss.
So flexibility is one of the things. Also working for companies outside of Serbia, what are the wages like compared to what it would be like if you were working in Serbia?
The wages are higher, of course. In my field, the wages depend on the target language, so they're not the same as if I would be translating into French or German, but they are still quite high for our standards.
And so you live in here in Belgrade. Have you ever thought about leaving Serbia?
Well, I'm probably one of the few people that never actually thought of leaving. I don't know. There is something that I just like here, like to have to live here, and maybe all the excitement and everything that is happening. So it's never dull. I don't know. I just never had the urge to leave.
Yeah, of course. And Serbia has a huge problem with brain drain, with people migrating out of Serbia to economies where there are higher wages. And your work was all conducted via the internet, which enables you to work with companies based outside of Serbia. Does that enable you to stay?
Yes. The issue now we have with brain drain is more like, okay, doctors are leaving, bus drivers are leaving, people, manual workers are leaving, but not so many people who can find jobs online or work online from home for some other employees in other countries, they don't have to leave. We have quite a bit of programmers that are working from here, remote for companies outside, and they are not leaving the company anymore. So in a way, this is a very good situation because you don't get the migrations anymore. People are staying in their own country. We now have a lack of bus drivers, a lack of people who should do deliveries. We don't have enough postmen, but more people with higher skills are here.
And so in October 2020, something happened which posed a major threat to your livelihood. And can you tell us what that was?
Yeah, well, a Facebook post appeared. And strangely enough, it was a Facebook post by the tax office who sent an invitation to everybody who was receiving money from abroad to report the incomes and pay taxes on this, which would be okay if it was a normal amount, but you would have to pay about half of the incomes plus some fines that you didn't report it on time. So that would for some years be about 80% of your incomes.
So we understand this correctly, in real terms, what were the impacts of this legislation on your income?
Well, I would have to pay like 75-80% of all my incomes during the last 5 years, pay them within 15 days. And nobody has that money because that money was spent.
So you're saying that the legislation would have meant that for all of your income that you'd earned over the past year, you would have had to have paid the tax office. You would have to pay the tax office 80% of that.
Yeah, and have 20% left, which is a lot of money.
Can you describe for us how you felt when you realized that?
I felt great despair, and well, I heard that some people already received invitations from the tax office to come to present evidence. So I was very much afraid that I will get the same one. I was anxiously waiting for January the 1st to have one tax year obsolete and to have a smaller amount of debt.
And so you have a family, you have kids, and you're suddenly faced with a potential real threat to your livelihood. If this had gone through, if you'd have had to have paid that, what would you have done?
We would probably lose our house. Because it would be that kind of an amount to pay that, well, you would have to sell your house.
And how many other people like you were facing the same level of risk around the country?
We are not sure how many freelancers there are, but some say that there are about 100,000 people who get money from abroad from freelancing. Some get several hundreds of euros, some get several thousands of euros per month.
So you see this Facebook post from the tax office and you realize what this means to you in real terms and the potential impact this is going to have on your life. And what is your response to that? What do you do? A big thanks to Sonia for speaking to me. And we'll hear more from her in the next episode of the podcast. For now, I want to turn to the Fair Work Serbia team. Branka Andakovic, Tanja Jacobi, and Maja Kovac, asking them about the broader context of the gig economy in Serbia. And so what are the main sectors in the gig economy in Serbia?
So when it comes to on-location platform work in Serbia, there are two main sectors, ride-hailing on one side and delivery services on the other. However, what we see lately, in last couple of years, there is a slow emergence of domestic work services in Serbia, embodied actually in a local platform called Uradi Zaradi.
In size, do we know how big these different platforms are and how much of a important part of the Serbian economy they are?
No, it's a good question, but actually nobody has these insights apart from the platforms themselves. We as a public policy research center tried to estimate the size of this sector several years ago when the actually platform economy was still very small in the country, and this was in 2020. From then onwards, the platform economy really boomed, and it is now really hard to say how big sector is and how many workers the platforms engage in Serbia. All that we know is that they are quickly expanding, starting from big cities like Belgrade, Novi Sad, Niš, Kragujevac in the beginning, and now we have many more other smaller places where these two major sectors actually appear, meaning ride-hailing to a lesser extent and delivery services to like high extent. Two biggest platforms in this, I would say, regard is Glovo and Wolt, and both of them are actually foreign European platforms that expanded to Serbia, and not only to Serbia, but also to Western Balkans region.
And I wanted to pick up on something you said, because you said you spoke about how this is the biggest sectors within the on-location platforms. Mm. Now, what about the other side? What about remote freelancing platforms? Is that a significant factor within the Serbian gig economy as a whole?
Actually, it is much bigger and influential sector, or at least it used to be many years ago. So the emergence of platform economy in Serbia was related to cloud work. Why is that? Many reasons, I guess, but one for sure, highly educated labor force that was seeking solutions outside of the Serbian labor market in terms of IT, creative, and other services that were being sought by global labor platforms. So in last 20 years, actually, the cloud workers becoming more and more visible and also higher in numbers. And as noted earlier, actually on location work really is a newer phenomenon, just emerging in pre-COVID times, really in the year of 2019 and then really blossoming in 2020 when COVID actually hit Serbia and also other places on globally.
And I guess my next question would be, how many workers, do we know how many workers both in the on location work and also the cloud work side of things are there within Serbia as a whole?
Well, according to the center research, there were 70,000 workers, and this was our like very our estimate, which was like very, let's say, conservative. According to the tax office, there are more than 100,000 people. And since we are measuring really cloud economy twice each year, we see that we are getting more and more people on in cloud work. And it's really a large phenomenon. On the other hand, we have no idea of how many people went through a gig economy. They're changing. I mean, some of them are here like for 3 or 4 years. Some of them are, coming and staying for a week and then leaving. We think that it might be that, for example, 10,000 people went through this type of work. But how many people really work, for example, at present, we don't know, because the platforms, again, are not speaking about that. What we know is that currently there is a shortage of these workers because e-commerce is booming in Serbia, and therefore couriers are very much sought after.
And there is one last point, I think, that is important and shows in our last round of research, is that actually people start working for platforms in order not to migrate from the country. And this is a recent trend. Decent pay, or actually extremely almost good pay in Serbia, is important for people to stay. In many other cases, they would actually leave and work abroad, leaving their families behind. So with platform work, with the emergence of platform work, actually they can stay in Serbia and earn relatively fair amount of money, of course less than if they worked in Germany or in some other European countries, but again allowing them to stay and be with their friends, families, etc. in Serbia.
And it feels like this is a theme that keeps coming up surrounding migration, and this brain drain of people leaving Serbia, is this a major issue that the country is facing at this time?
It is. I mean, it has been a case for a rather long time. Serbia is actually a country that has very strong migrant communities outside of Serbia. And this is not the only country in the region with this kind of characteristics. Economic reasons, for sure, are playing part in this. But also, like, DNA of the place. You know, if you have this migratory experience, it is much easier for people to leave because they know that there is a community of Serbian, of course, origin to accept them wherever they go. It can be the US, Australia, Africa, Europe, name it. So it is really a part of our DNA. On the other side, economic reasons were also always very strong reasons for people to leave.
Next time on the Fair Work podcast.
A lot of people were on our side. You know, in Serbia, there are so many freelancers. There is almost, you know, almost every family has a freelancer. So, you know, there were these grandmothers, grandfathers, parents who would also, it was also their issue, you know.
Then finally we received an invitation from the government to participate in negotiations on how to solve the issue of the past period.
A big thanks to everyone who spoke to me for this podcast episode. At Fair Work, we believe that all work can and should be characterised by fair pay, fair conditions, fair contracts, fair management and fair representation. Platforms ultimately have the power to improve standards and the ability to choose to. Many platforms operate in numerous countries around the world, and whilst every country, every city and every worker is unique, many of the issues experienced by workers are transnational. In addition, platforms often operate across multiple countries, and the practices which they employ have huge impacts on the lives of gig workers around the globe. Platforms can take a proactive approach to ensure the work they provide is fair and decent. We're actively campaigning to improve conditions for gig workers around the world and hold platforms to account. You can find out more at fair.work. This episode was written and produced by Robbie Warren. Our music was composed by Louis Bolles.